This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
So if you tuned into Enterprise Biz Bytes last week, we covered a story about how some tech companies in China are posting job listings out in the open for candidates below the age of 30. This is a growing problem in China that has been labeled the 30-plus middle age crisis, and it's happening because two-thirds of tech workers in China are below the age of 30, and recruiters are only reinforcing that criteria by not hiring and sometimes even firing employees above the age of 35. This isn't just a Chinese problem, though. Tech giants like IBM have faced allegations of persistent age discrimination in the US. Apparently, there's been a pattern by which they let older staff members go. And then, of course, you have companies like Google, who have been fighting an ageism-related lawsuit since 2015. Now, the reason behind ageism is pretty obvious, I think. The media loves youth and the fairy tale startup story. That's why we keep telling it again and again and again. And the formula is pretty simple. Take a couple of college dropouts in their early 20s, put them in an unconducive environment, potentially make them have no money. Being broke is a way better element in this story, and then one day have them create the next big tech revolution. I don't know, like Facebook, a Google, a Twitter, an Apple. You know, it's all the same story again and again. And it's an underdog story, which is why it's so uplifting. And it's also why we rarely talk about the founders and entrepreneurs who started extremely successful businesses and companies after that age milestone. So, as an extension of last week's edition of BizBytes, today's episode of Five for Fortune is going to be all about the founders and creators and entrepreneurs who only started their mega companies or their magnum opuses after they reached the age of 30 or after they passed the age of 30. I guess starting early in life is fine and all that, but that doesn't mean the same success cannot be attained at a later age as well. This is Five for Fortune with Arvind Yuvaraj, and today's episode is called 5 Business Icons Who Started Their Companies After the Age of 30.
Number 1.
Okay, since we started this episode by talking about China's 30-plus middle-age crisis, let's reverse that argument a bit and talk about the most influential entrepreneur that China has right now, and that's Jack Ma. Of course, Jack Ma, you know, is the founder of Alibaba and someone who is so successful that his empire has sort of held off giants like Amazon from even growing in this Pacific region. Now, let me ask you, at what age do you think Jack Ma started Alibaba? Would you say like 25? Maybe 26 tops? Nope. In fact, Jack Ma only started to work on the idea of something like Alibaba in his early 30s, because before that, he pretty much thought that he didn't have a shot in the tech scene. See, during an interview with Charlie Rose, Ma revealed that he failed his college entrance exam 3 times. After that, he tried to get a job in more than 30 different companies. One of those companies was KFC, and his job application was rejected each and every time. In fact, and this is a pretty interesting story, he says that 24 people applied for the KFC job and 23 of those people got accepted, and he was the only one who wasn't. Wow. Anyway, when Jack Ma was 31, he started a company called the China Yellow Pages. It was like an early concept predecessor to Alibaba. It made about $800,000 in 3 years that it was active at the time. And then finally in 1999, when he was 35 years old, Jack Ma launched Alibaba. But see, the thing is, even Alibaba wasn't an instant success. Just like Amazon, Alibaba didn't have or didn't make any profits for the first 3 years. I mean, obviously, things got a lot better after that, and today, Jack Ma is worth about $41 billion, and his company is a massive global e-commerce platform. Oh, and also, I'll be playing some of my favorite interview clips from some of these founders throughout the show, so let's kick that off with this interview with Jack Ma. It's from the World Economic Forum, and it's a pretty interesting few minutes of Jack Ma talking about a whole bunch of different things, especially how he organizes things like his time and things that happen in Alibaba itself. Have a listen.
No matter how strategic good it is, you're supposed to spend money on your own people, right? Not everybody can pass Harvard, like me, we are not good at education, right? We should spend money on those people who are not good at schooling, right? The difference between Amazon and us, Amazon is more like an empire. Everything they should control themselves, buy and sell. And our philosophy is that we want a bigger ecosystem. Our philosophy is to empower others to sell, empower others to service, empower making sure the other people are more powerful than us. Making sure with our technology, our innovation, our partners, our 10 million small business sellers, they can compete with Microsoft, IBM. Our philosophy is that we think using internet technology, we can make every company become Amazon. Remember one thing. Today, for our sales, our GMV last year is more than $550 billion. To hire people deliver for us, we need 5 million people. So how can we hire 5 million people deliver things for us to deliver the things we sold? The only way we do is empower the service company, logistics companies, making sure they are efficient, making sure that they make the money.
Number two.
We all know here that what we have created is unique and it's solving a gigantic problem. No one on earth is going to do what we've done. And when you use this product, we all know how magical it is. It will find its home. Everybody on the planet loves music. There are millions of musicians that produce great music and they can't find each other. When this thing finally finds its home, it's going to change culture. And how many times in your life do you have a chance to do that? That's what this is about. Did it work?
Right, quickly moving on to number two on today's list. But before that, the clip you just heard was actually of Tim Westergren. That name isn't too popular outside of the US, but he's actually the founder of Pandora, which is a streaming service like Spotify and Apple Music. That clip above was Tim talking about how he convinced 50 of his employees to work for him without pay for 2 years. Now, why 2 years? Well, because Pandora went bankrupt for 2 years. And before that, Pandora was a hardware company that allowed stores to play music. By the way, Pandora is only available in the States, but it's a highly successful platform. I mean, you know, it has fallen a bit over the last few years because of stiff competition from people like Spotify and Apple Music, but it's still a very strong streaming service in the States. And here's the thing, before starting Pandora, Westergren was a failed musician, he was a part-time composer, he was a nanny, or a manny as he would call it, and he was, you know, like an overall hippie. So, yeah, you know, not an easy road for this guy. Anyway, I'm talking about Tim Westergren because he only started Pandora when he was 35 years old. And although he started Pandora, which was his first entrepreneurial endeavor at 35, it didn't become an online radio station until Westergren was 37, so almost 40 at this point. It's actually a pretty interesting story. So have a listen to this interview with Tim in which he talks about his early life and how everything sort of led to the streaming service that he owns today.
Hunted around and wound up getting a job as a nanny. that's a respectable profession. Actually, manny is the proper term for that. And I was a manny for the first 5 years after school. That was my job. It's not really what my parents expected when I graduated college, but kids are my other lifelong passion. So for the first 5 years after school, my life consisted of getting up in the morning, sitting down at the piano, and playing piano till about 1 or 2 in the afternoon. And then going to pick up these two kids, 9, 10-year-old boys at elementary school, taking them home and hanging out in the afternoon, playing wiffle ball on the street with a bunch of kids and making sure they did their homework. Then cooking dinner for the family and then coming home, getting back on the piano and playing until I went to bed. So I was playing piano 8, 9 hours a day and then hanging out with kids. Did that for a while and then wound up getting involved in rock bands. Spent about 7, 8 years living out of a van, being sort of part of this huge sea of I think a lot of talented but completely invisible working musicians. And eventually kind of grew tired of that and then wound up a film composer, writing music for picture. Started with sort of small, short student films and kind of gradually worked my way into doing sort of independent feature films, which took a few years. So I was kind of on this winding road, and over the course of that experience as a musician, a bunch of ideas began to kind of accumulate in my head. One was, of course, all of this undiscovered, incredible music that I'd experienced or seen as a musician. Maybe I could codify this taste profiling I was doing and turn it into a technology by marrying it to math and build an algorithm that would allow people to discover songs, connect songs based on their musicological attributes.
Stick around, we've got more founders who started their businesses after 30 coming up after these messages, BFM 89.9.
Boyish 40-something millionaires, BFM 89.9.
Hello, you're still listening to 5 for Fortune. I am Arvind Yuvaraj, and today we're talking about founders who only founded their extremely successful companies after the age of 30. I thought it would be fun to talk about, since everyone's always repeating the same 20-something founder story over and over again. It's just to let you know that that's not always the case, and you can sort of launch a successful company after the age of 30. Anyway, we talk about social media a lot and about how most of the big ones are started by kids in dorm rooms, basically. But we tend to forget that Evan, or Ev Williams, co-founder of Twitter and founder of Medium, started the social media service when he was 34 back in 2006.
Number 3.
Before Evan Williams co-founded Twitter in 2006, he spent years and years working at other tech companies like Google, where he worked on the Blogger platform, you remember Blogger, among other projects. It wasn't until 2006 when he got together a few friends and they thought up of the concept of Twitter, which is now one of the three biggest social media platforms in the entire world. Evan didn't stick around Twitter for long though, because he stepped down as CEO and went on to work on other projects, but he made a killing. And when I say killing, he made a killing on the company's IPO, so it all worked out pretty well for him in the end. Ev Williams is now worth about $1.8 billion. He was worth about $2 plus a few years ago, but Twitter has had its, you know, its ups and downs. You can check out some of his TED Talk segments on YouTube, but one of my favorite interviews with the guy is a segment he had on CNN Money's channel called My Darkest Moment. It gets pretty deep, but it's also very interesting, so have a listen.
I remember in my first internet company, we just called it an internet company, in Nebraska in the 90s, I remember literally searching in the couch for change, because I had stayed up all night working by myself and I needed some coffee and I had no money at all. And so I was looking around the office and searching in the couch for change to buy some coffee. That was many years ago, but as recently as a few years ago, I got fired from being the CEO of Twitter, which was incredibly hard and devastating. And you know, it's a roller coaster. Yeah, I had a mentor who told me after that experience, when people have crises, then one of two things happens. They don't recover, or they do recover and they get better. And so they don't stay the same. It affects them. And he told me, probably just to make me feel better at the time, that you will definitely be better because of this, even if you don't feel it now. I'm finally feeling like that might be true.
Number 4.
Okay, number 4 on today's list is a bit of a cheat, but just a bit. So you've probably heard of Cher Wang. And if you haven't, well, she's the one who founded the mobile company HTC. Actually, wait, I think, mobile company is a bit of an understatement. She founded the telecommunications giant that manufactures mobile devices called HTC. There, better. So before coming up with HTC, Cher actually had a very long and successful career in IT, or information technology. That's why I said this is a bit of a cheat. After becoming a sort of expert in those fields, she decided to team up with Peter Chu in 1997 and launched HTC when she was just shy of her 40th birthday. So you're probably thinking, HTC isn't doing so well now, you know, they aren't as relevant as they used to be. And you know, you're right, it isn't, and they aren't. The company peaked in 2011 and it has lost nearly 85% of share value since then, so that's a huge drop. drop, and that's because of competition from other brands and so many Chinese makes coming up, and even competition from people like Samsung and iPhones and stuff like that. It has lost a lot of value since then, so it isn't exactly the juggernaut that used to be, but the point here is that it used to be. Cher also made it into Forbes' list of 100 power women rankings. I think she came in at number 20 twice in a row or something like that. And because HTC isn't doing so well, Cher has actually returned to the company as CEO and head of marketing to help boost sales and probably, hopefully, bring it back to its prime. Maybe. Hey, if you miss any parts of this show and you would like to listen to it again, you can with the power of technology and our nifty little app, the BFM app, which is of course available on the Apple App Store and on Google Play.
Number 5.
Right, moving on to number 5 and our final segment on today's show, let's talk about Walmart. Now, Walmart may not be popular here in Malaysia because we don't have any yet, but it has been ranked as the world's largest retailer for a very, very long time now. And that being said, Walmart actually came from very humble origins. They came from very humble beginnings. See, Walmart was started by a man named Sam Walton. He started his first store in Newport, Arkansas with the $20,000 that he borrowed from his father-in-law, which was a huge amount at the time. And Sam didn't have these ideas of turning it into like a chain of stores at this point, but he was interested in expanding to new areas. So Sam, who was a military veteran, he moved to Bentonville and he opened another store there called Walton's 5 and 10. But it wasn't until 1962 that Sam Walton, who was 44 at this point, he opened his first ever Walmart in Rogers, Arkansas. Walton presided over Walmart over the next few decades and took Walmart public in 1970. Today, Walmart employs more than 2.2 million associates and operates 11,000 outlets across the globe. So yeah, you know, pretty obvious, the biggest retailer in the world. It's one of those, you know, one of those true blue great American business stories, you know? It's like man from small town starts a brand and it grows into this great American giant, and it just turns out to be like a pretty cool story. Here's my favorite Sam Walton interview. It's actually with his brother, Bud Walton. He's also on this show, and it's from a segment called Reflections. I think it's from the 60s, if I'm not mistaken, or the 70s. Sam talks about business and employment strategies and just how he ran Walmart overall back in the early days.
The things that we know are important today were applied in that first Newport store, Bud, you remember? We worked our heads off. We tried to take care of our customers as best we could. But it allowed me to get involved in the Chamber of Commerce and get involved in the Industrial Committee.
It was a great place to start.
And one of my goals, as you well know, was to make that the best store in Arkansas.
That's right.
And we got there before we left town. We became the biggest store, the most profitable Ben Franklin store in the state of Arkansas. We knew so little about the variety store business that we had to take the book that was written by Ben Franklin and apply the principles and apply the controls that, and the merchandising programs that they outlined for us. But of course, knowing you and knowing I myself a little bit, we added on, didn't we?
That's exactly right. But
we were mavericks even then, and we started doing strange things like cranking up ice cream machines on the sidewalk on Saturday night.
Popcorn
on the other end of the sidewalk, hawking anything we could hawk on that looked like it might have a chance to sell wherever. It made an easy life, actually. We worked hard.
That's right.
But it gave us a vehicle to ride on.
That's right, exactly.
Without having to buy merchandise, you know, ourselves all the time, or distribution centers, not having to do the thing we'd had to do when we built Walmart. Our company's built on people. The success we've had is because of our people. And I believe that. You believed it from the beginning. All of our associates believe it. We've made partners out of our folks rather than employees. And they know that we've been sincere in trying to share the profits with them. And they, in turn, have worked harder than our competitors. We've kept our prices lower than our competitors' prices. We've led the nation in cost of doing business, in sales per square foot, in all the measurements you can imagine over about a 15-year period.
that is all the time that we have on today's show, but stick around because Enterprise Biz Bytes will be coming up in just a bit, at 12 o'clock to be more precise, with some really good stories of tech and business, just to keep you up to date, after some music and some messages, of course. This has been Arvind Yuvaraj on 5 for Fortune, BFM 89.9, the business station.